This is Mae Brussel, and it's part two of broadcast number 743, and it's March the 3rd, 1983. I hate to spend so much time in a quick hour doing a resume of the areas that I touched upon before, but they're very pertinent to the hundreds of articles that have come out in the past 3 to 4 weeks that are leaning to fit exactly into the synopsis that I gave you the first 4 weeks, and that's why it is so important. Now, to continue with this story and the ABC program of Mr. Senator Ernest Hollings, he said on the program this week with David Brinkley, he was asked about speculation. He was aware of speculation that pressure from the White House to launch the shuttle before Reagan's State of the Union address scheduled the evening of the launch was circulating all over Washington. It ought to be cleared up. And Hollings said that it had come to his attention that the message came from the White House to get it up in time for the State of the Union message. Who was in contact? Hollings asked, and I called his office in Washington today to give him some leads on who I think could have been or where to look for it. And again, I'll tell you in a few minutes. He said, "You can't tell me the White House wasn't in contact with that particular launch. What was said? Who was called? When were they called?" Because everyone in the Cape says, for the first time in the entire philosophy and process, everything was reversed. It was violated. Why that day was it violated? And then Larry Speaks was on TV this week in between the hearings saying it's the most vicious and distorted rumor he ever heard and blaming the press. And that's why Reagan was calling them sons of bitches. And Jesse Moore last week told the committee that NASA officials have not been under any political pressure, but he's told a dozen lies back to back in the last 2 weeks. This program operates on a launch by launch basis. And Jake Garn of Utah, Senator Jake Garn, said he didn't believe the pressure was a factor in the decision, although he agreed with the commission's conclusion that the launch decision process was flawed. Well, if it was flawed and they went against all the others, it had to be political because it wasn't scientific and it wasn't managerial. It has nothing to do with business contracts. In a sense, it wouldn't make good business to have your machinery blow up and tell them to go ahead when you've designed it in a way that it won't work under any of those circumstances. Garn also said on ABC, "I think the evidence is overwhelming through 24 launches that NASA always had safety first. I was involved in that process on my own flight. 5 delays, 4 of them for safety of flight, and a lot of pressure there." But the point is that Senator Jake Garn may have known there was pressure to fly, but they still didn't fly. They opt for safe. So in this case, how much pressure comes, what kind of a safety valve is let down or loose, that in this case they flew against what the builders and the makers of these pieces of machinery said to do, and therefore when they go against the pressures and deny themselves the chance to wait until a little later in the afternoon. And so what was the pressure? Now, as I say, I called the office of Senator Hollings, and I suggested that there were several people that we know about, maybe more, that were, in quotes, traumatized by the events. LA Times, February 28th, has a story. Elmer Thomas is the first on-the-ground casualty of the Challenger disaster. He's an engineer with NASA. He collapsed of a heart attack right after the accident. He had a position in the launch viewing room. He died 2 days later. Now, I wrote an article on deaths right after Watergate, and there were 31 of them, and one of them was Beverly Kay, the secretary who worked for Rosemary Woods, who worked on those 18 minutes that were erased on the Richard Nixon tapes. And I wonder if, by any coincidence, Elmer Thomas was the person in the room who got the phone call who relayed the message. It has to be some kind of a gopher or a very secure telephone to Mr. William Graham's. But Elmer Thomas died right after that. And the very next day, a Lockheed employee was described as losing his mind and going crazy, and they had to take him away because he worked with the team, the crew, that had some kind of a damage on the external fuel tank where it was slightly scratched. And as I mentioned a few weeks ago, they hoped it was repaired, otherwise the oxygen could get in that hole. And the article in the LA Times says that it was apparently repaired. There wasn't a positive and apparently, but they said, well, it posed no threat to the safety of the shuttle. The worker reacted strongly. He said, this is it. It's my fault. I've killed 7 people. And he went out of his mind. Now, Lockheed has been a conduit for the CIA, for assassination teams. And I think of this spaceship, the Shuttle Challenger, being similar to the political assassinations and the committees being compared to the Warren Commission, in the sense that the story of exploration of space, to look at Halley's Comet or to look at Jupiter and so forth, the exploration and the business part of it, the managerial and the business contracts, was just a cover for Star Wars. And just as the Korean War in 1950 was an excuse for Nazis such as Nikolai Meloxa to come to California, the head of the Iron Guard to come to Richard Nixon's law offices in Whittier, or for Otto von Bolschwing to come to this country, and many of the top Nazis, the excuse was the Cold War had escalated in South Korea. And I believe that since Ronald Reagan and Edward Teller presented the Star Wars in 1983, and I'll be developing this more and more, the infights and the changing of people in charge of NASA, key positions being changed and throughout the whole network as of to this date of when the Challenger went off and afterwards, that it was a military kind of an operation that was done. And so if this was true, certain key people would go crazy, would die right on the spot. And I think it's very important to check that out. I also suggested to Senator Holling's secretary, I left a message for that the Rogers Committee is looking into the 27th and the 28th. The conference at night with Morton Thiokol, don't go, and also what happened when the Challenger blew up. But they're not going into the 25th, the 26th of January, because the 26th was the Super Bowl Sunday, and it was a clear day, and Krista McAuliffe was riding her bike, and Mr. Smith or one of the officers was riding, and they weren't doing anything on Sunday afternoon and could have gone off. And they had some mishaps on Monday that were so unimportant, where the screwdriver didn't work and the bolt didn't work, and it looked like they were just stalling because I don't believe they didn't have the right equipment. So that on the 26th, which was Sunday, and 25th was Saturday, they waited because of dust storms in Africa. Well, if weather is a factor, if dust in Morocco is a factor, or dust or sand in Senegal, Africa, then they are also aware of climate changes in Florida. If climate or dust or sand affects the machine, so does cold. Cold on the tiles for reentry, cold along the seams that could tear if the fuel is frozen, solid fuel knocks aside, and cold on the seals that don't bend to hold in so that the hydrogen doesn't pour out, which it did. So the key is why they didn't go up on the Saturday. If sand is no more problem than cold, I'm sure, to the machine, and they wouldn't have needed it anyway. And Sunday, they had all day, afternoon and evening, and they had Monday afternoon, and they had Tuesday afternoon, and because they didn't use any of those, they opt for the coldest in the history of any space launch, and I believe they were testing the launch, and that's what happened. Now, Mr. William Rogers, was appointed by Ronald Reagan, this is commission, to investigate the Space Shuttle Challenger's explosion, but he refers to, he has summaries of what NASA did, and he talks about the procedure for whether to launch, and NASA is a general word used by the various factors in the newspaper and the news media, but NASA isn't a homogeneous one organization with one mind. It's a group of people with different opinions fighting among each other and fighting to the point that could be fatal to testing machinery, to taking over the power, to pulling other people out of office to make way to get in. Just as Mr. Beggs was removed, he was the NASA director until December of 85, and then he was indicted for taking millions and millions of dollars from General Dynamics. The same day that he was indicted, the other General Dynamics people were let off for doing the same things. But William Graham then became the director of NASA, and he's from the Heritage Foundation, which works with Mr. Coor and Fritz Kramer and Henry Kissinger and Daniel Graham and the far, far right wing involved in High Frontier and Star Wars. And there's a bitter fight going on between them. I cite a little bit of it and give you more details this next week. So NASA is not one group. It's the seven people that were victims of the tragedy are part of what are NASA policies that are general and which has factions fighting each other and threatening each other and offering huge millions of dollars of contracts if people will behave in a certain way. Now, NASA at Marshall Space Center in Huntsville, Alabama, I have fingered as being the culprits in this, a Mr. Lucas and a Mr. Reinwaltz. I'll go into those later, the names, Reinertz, rather, and the men at NASA at Marshall Space Center. That is NASA. That is the home of Project Paperclip, the Defense Department, of Wernher von Braun, of Mr. Rudolph, and the top Nazis that came to this country to prepare for World War III, for first strike, for mastery of the rockets. And this is the Star Wars weapons factory, NASA at Marshall Space Center, and they're the people that pressured the Utah firm to make their decision to launch as against the engineers who make the piece of machinery. Now, NASA also, the second NASA is at Cape Canaveral and the Kennedy Space Center, and that is where up to this time the shuttles were launching from, and when the weather is good, they come home through there or else through Edwards Air Force Base in California. That is the site for the takeoff, but the main brains and policies aren't made at Cape Canaveral or Kennedy Space Center. They're made with the some retired and some not retired Nazis from Huntsville working with our Americans, but well-trained at losing lives and working with slave labor over in Punamund and Dora, and being able to test things like the rings, whether they will hold up in cold weather or not, knowing they won't, or shifting the power from the alleged exploratory again to the Star Wars. There's the NASA in Huntsville, and there's the NASA in Florida, combined the Kennedy Center, and then there's the another NASA, and that's the Johnson Space Center in Houston, Texas. That has to do with a lot of the politics and the brains and the command center. When the Apollo program is going to the space shuttle, the computers work and the boardroom is there, and that's where the Johnson Space Center is important for who's the head of the entire NASA organization, the politics of Houston, Texas, the Defense Department, and the CIA that's down there in Houston, the command center. Then, in this particular case, there were the NASA people at Utah under Morton Thiokol, where we have Mr. Fletcher, part of citizenry of the state of Utah, an active person, former president of the University of Utah, working closely with Senator Garn and Senator Hatch, two of our most conservative gung-ho, make the weapons and ask later senators from Utah. So the Utah Center was important in this decision, and also Rockwell International in Downey, California, where they make the main carriage and where it is manufactured and where they know icicles can fall back and crack the size of the machine. They're discounting that now, but they were heavy into that before. So NASA depends on the team in Alabama, in California, in Texas, Utah, and Florida. There are many other branches of places where they contract, but these are the communication places, the places where they would work together in case of danger and should be working together in questions of circumstances questionable of whether they should take off or go, and if the orders come to Huntsville or to any one of the group and it's passed along as a military command, then I'm sure it spreads on down the line to the others that they're going to go. At the time of the accident, NASA, all five, was completely in disarray, and I'll detail some more for you on that. But the big change in NASA, and I want to emphasize again, I had that early when the Challenger went down, the big shift was in March of 1983 to take away the behavior of the space program as being civilian and placing it with people militarily. And after one explosion, such as the Challenger, which was the runt of the litter, always had problems, was always broken, was identified as a spy ship when Larry McDonald went down, launched at midnight, and was over the Soviet Union during that episode. This was the runt, and this is the one they could unload the Rainbow group with, and now the stories are that the next three shuttles going up will be all military, and as I said before, the military then will have priority. Now, William Rogers has been accused of covering up already by Senator Hollings and others. And there was a story in the LA Times, and it pretty well does his cover story for what he's going to report. He said the procedure for deciding whether to launch the Challenger was clearly flawed. The procedure was flawed. No, the procedure wasn't flawed. I have to take issue with him again. The people understood perfectly what was happening, and they forced the persons over the engineers at Rockwell and Morton Thiokol that you have to change your mind. These were top-level launching decisions, and those people, according to the cover story of the committee now, is that they were unaware of warnings of cold. I don't believe those top people, those top five, were unaware of anything like that because they talked about cold as a danger on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. So they went with the lowest temperature. And the fact that NASA refused to accept the Thiokol engineers is because they had to get orders from high up, again, militarily, from the Defense Department and the President of the United States. And when the shuttle exploded, the engineers gave the reasons why it exploded and how they knew in July 84 and 1985 in August, the details of how it would happen. There no longer was any reason to believe that all of NASA who makes these decisions doesn't know or they shouldn't be there. Now, the LA Times quotes again Mr. William Rogers saying, in quote, warnings on shuttle safety were not fully understood or acted upon or brought to the attention of top officials who decided to launch the Challenger. Those are absolute lies. They did not fully understand. They understood perfectly well the difference between 8 and 9 degrees and 50 degrees or 30 degrees. They acted upon them by understanding. This is the cover story. They acted upon them, and this information was brought to the attention of the top officials. There is no way that they couldn't know the dangers because they were checking the ice early in the morning. They'd have to know the dangers on the seals. Now, there are many large articles that, when I say large articles, I don't mean columns. I mean the full page of a newspaper. You must be seeing them in your papers, those of you that listen or subscribe to World Watchers. I'm just going to cite the titles of about 10 of them and then share those with you next week. But just to get the tone of where I'm leading and what all this massive news about is about. One, the Los Angeles Times has a huge story. NASA officials deny that the firm was pressured to launch. And this has to do with those hearings, the influence of NASA on Morton Thiokol. They did force them to launch, and the engineers said, we won't go along with this. We'd hate to be the ones if something happened. Another large newspaper article, launch expert opposed liftoff to the very end. And he stayed out, the Rockwell expert, Rocco Petroni, stayed out of the decision to go, just as Mr. McDonald and others at Morton Thiokol said, and he said he would never go along with the decision to launch. Another story in the LA Herald, networks should air the shuttle hearings, and it tells about the high drama of the moment in those CNN hearings were plenty high drama and very interesting, and they cite how when the shuttle went down, it was photographed over and over again, and not one single major network shows those hearings or shows these people so you can identify them. Another long story, long-term severe cost of subtle loss emerging. And this says the space program will be severely handicapped for years to come. National security requirements come first. They must place military payloads in orbits and or they can't be usurped for the remaining three shuttles for the next 5 years. The United States must put the remaining three of military, and then it says in quotes, the needs of the Defense Department are not flexible. Commercial and scientific launchings will be slashed. That is a whole page article, two pages actually, but they say the military isn't flexible, and this is one reason I think the military wanted to use those three and everyone afterwards, and therefore they could blow up the one with a civilian teacher and the rainbow astronauts on it. Another long story in the LA Times, NASA's flaws extend beyond its launches. Serious discord at top level. Then another top headline on the next page. NASA, seeds of the agency's woes have been germinating for years. Now, since World War II, NASA has developed the space program Four on Offensive, a First Strike Offensive for World War III. And this article goes on about the fights that were germinating, and as I say, since Reagan's presenting his Star Wars proposal in March of 83, the problems and the fights have been festering. And this article goes into the infighting of the teams, the very top teams. And as I say, broadcast 740, I talked about the Star Wars versus the State Department and Pentagon, the fighting at the top, and the influence it was having on the agency. Another long article, NASA official denies he knew of engineer descent. That's George Hardy, who's keeping away from the other top officials, and said, I didn't know anything about it. And then there have been a whole series of articles putting down NASA, which is the purpose now to build up the military uses. And Wall Street Journal has a long story. NASA wants a master of publicity, fumbles in handling the shuttle crisis. And it goes on to say it's amazing that they were so ill-prepared for anything. They only thought wonderful things would happen. Well, Mr. Beggs was removed shortly before. Mr. Graham had no technology on the space programs to begin with. Jesse Moore was just new into position. And there was a shifting of people in Houston and all around to put what appeared like ignorant people there, not knowledgeable, as the chain of command broke down. The LA Herald has a long editorial behind the shuttle tragedy. NASA needs to clean up its act. Now it is really being destroyed. Haynes Johnson, Washington Post, February the 12th. NASA's decaying public image and the replacement of William Graham, who wasn't well known to the public or inside NASA. He didn't have space background. William Graham is being promoted after the shuttle was blown up to Houston, Texas for a bigger job, but he was fumbling at this time and playing dumb. They all are a bunch of piano players at the whorehouse who didn't know anything is going on upstairs. Another long section of articles based upon the hearings. Top NASA officials unaware of talk to delay launch. You can't be up all night fighting the weather problem, such as Alan MacDonald was describing, and not be told. And those who knew didn't pass it on to the others. That is a big cover story. We don't know what's happening. And then, of course, the New York Times has a long story, February 13th. NASA set aside a fail-safe rule for the booster seal. They didn't have a second backup ring. And as I say, as I read these articles, and there's a mountain of them to read, it seems that they wanted this one to go. There was no second guessing on this, nothing to protect it. If one seal didn't hold, this was to end for all purposes what you've seen of NASA up till the present time, and get ready for the next stage. Now, out of the Huntsville area are people from the Project Paperclip operation. Wall Street Journal, February 26, has a story. History shows rocketry has been a hard and unforgiving science. And there's quotations of Conrad Dannenberg, one of Wernher von Braun's scientists from Project Paperclip. They identify him as a paperclip scientist, and how they saw many friends killed in experiments, that's what rocketry is, and many were strapped to solid fuel boosters with gliders and on snow sleds, and the gist of the article is, in the process of developing space weaponry or space stations, lots of people die, so what? And they quote Conrad Dannenberg from Paperclip, then another George von Thiessenhausen, also from Paperclip, and he says these mishaps were inevitable. And he describes how the liquid fuel on the V-2 rocket posed a problem, and how they were always under tremendous pressure in Puniman, that they were experimenting and having many deaths. And what I really believe, as I say, is that the Challenger was an experiment. The ICE team said, we went out and checked the ice, and it was down, 7-8 degrees, but they didn't report it because it was only to be used for future test cases. They didn't use it to stop the flight. It was to be used later to test. This is similar to the Japanese in Manchuria freezing American GIs and prisoners and shooting in their legs to see if it goes through the ice, or Joseph Mengele and the top Nazis doing tests in Germany and freezing people and throwing them in frozen water. The tests have been done in Germany, in Nazi Germany, on various prisoners by various scientists, many scientists and doctors. And now these people from Project Paperclip surface again after this tragedy, as much as to say, well, so what? We've gone through a lot of this before. Then there's a quotation. Wernher von Braun was very much against NASA's decision to to use solid rockers for manned flight. We felt that using an essentially uncontrollable rocket was a radical step that would compromise the safety of the shuttle. NASA decided to use them. The cabin there is 15 stories high, 170,000 pounds of solid boosters, the largest, most complex ever built. And the Wall Street Journal goes on to say this is a whole new ball game when you're talking about temperature stresses of supersonic space travel. We have no experience in this, and a single malfunctioning can cause the collapse of the entire system. That's referred to as the tent pole failure. And we've had plenty of those when we're camping. When that center pole goes, it all goes down. And they said the Challenger disaster and the possibility of freezing weather could cause gases to leak past the rubber gaskets that shield the shuttle's right solid rocket booster. So that the scientists for Paperclip are saying that Von Braun said, don't go with this. We went with it. We used it on a ship that almost blew up earlier in 1983. It went within inches of blowing up. The seals had been burned. They knew they would burn in the cold. And now these people are coming out of the woodwork and saying Von Braun didn't want it anyway. And out in Vandenberg Air Force Base in California, there will be a heater to heat up where you don't have the ice. They already have a new kind of a booster ready to go where you won't have this problem. And visually having it explode right there, waiting until it's cold, because Florida is usually warm. So instead of going Saturday, Sunday, Monday morning, Monday afternoon, Tuesday afternoon, they went in the cold. And who knows if a little nick on the side by the Lockheed people, the super agents of spies and intelligence, didn't help it along because the thing exploded and the emphasis is on the seal. And the poor fellow that was out there working went out of his mind and said he had killed these people. And the New York Times has some quotations in there about this event, and they compare it at the present time to the artichoke. Remember the Operation Artichoke, the mind control program of the MK Ultra. And this person from NASA said, the investigation of what's going on now is like an artichoke, one serious NASA official said. Every day they peel something else. The commission has begun pointing the finger at the individuals and the procedures involved in the catastrophe, and the resulting picture isn't pretty. The White House has been surprised by some of the disclosures before the Rogers Commission, particularly the defect of the O-ring seals and the intense arguments after Morton Thiokol engineers warned NASA not to launch the Challenger in cold weather. They've been informing the White House, of course, about those problems. The LA Herald has a short story that was picked up also in the LA Times. Political battle coming up. Senator Riegel and other congressional critics are troubled by the Presidential Commission's inevitable ties to the White House and by their penchant for meeting in private. This forced members of Congress to rely on news media, not on testimony, for most of their information. Now, Reagan campaigned for the teacher in space. Reagan and NASA set up a program for children and school children to watch it. Why would the White House cover up the investigation of how the teacher was killed unless they were going to talk about her that evening and had pushed the investigation? Because they had an interest in the children and in their teacher to want to know how this happened, and the president is interfering with the process. When members of the Senate Commerce Committee wanted to hear the Rogers Committee testimony and witnesses, they said, no, we represent the president. This is the president's commission, and you can't come in. This is the executive. This commission is for him so that he knows, and you can't hear what these people are saying. So if he appointed this commission, and he also set up the teacher as somebody that he was going to use for his very important State of the Union message, you'd think that he would want to get to the very bottom of this instead of covering it, but he is covering it, so he must have had some part in the total disaster of launching it. Rogers' excuse, as I say, is that he works for the president and the legislative shouldn't interfere in a national tragedy of this kind. And that's an article from a short article from the LA Times. And then there was a much larger article in the Los Angeles Herald and Examiner. Democrats ask independent subtle probe. And many of you may have heard this. I don't think it went over the wire services. It was on the LA Times. And this goes into the fact that Senator Hollings is accusing this committee of covering up. And now it's become, from the place that I reviewed for you where Dan Rather said it was political, and 2 weeks ago it was a political decision to launch, The Democrats are asking for an independent congressional examination of the matter, and Senator Hollings has said that the stakes are high if the controversy grows and the conclusions are clouded by the kind of uncertainty that plagued the Warren Commission's findings on the assassination of John Kennedy. The consequences will be damaging for the nation's space program. And I will continue next week with where I left off. I hope I can continue there with the political arguments of Democrats versus Republicans and the charges that William Rogers, handpicked by Ronald Reagan, is covering up the truth about this Challenger disaster. In the meanwhile, this is Mae Brussel. You take care. Thank you again for the many books and articles, and I'll be back with you next week.